My name doesn't matter. All you need to know is that I'm a phantom, a figment, a man who was mistaken for a waitstaff twice that night. Odd, given my outfit. I managed to avoid additional embarrassments by wallflowering in the shadow of the grand staircase, their cheeks pink from southern comfort. The partners, or shareholders, as the firm called them, stood chatting in clusters around the dining room. I had been invited by my law firm's leaders to attend their annual party at Octavia Whitmore's mansion on the Avenue of Streetcars. It was a highlight of my life, an honor for a lowly associate just to be invited, although I was surprised to be told to show up in a costume. Rough fabric chafed against my collarbone. I was dressed as a Roman centurion. I had rented the Mega Deluxe option, no expense spared. Full tunic of lamb's wool, leather sandals, and five, count 'em, five, Hollywood prop-grade weapons. A sword, a javelin, a bow and arrow, a shield, and a dagger. I never knew that Roman soldiers used daggers, but the costume guy assured me that they did use daggers, the dagger being the preferred weapon of choice for when shit got real, which apparently it did from time to time. The first floor of Octavia's mansion was a series of large rooms. Playful notes of sandalwood and jasmine lingered in the foyer. I spotted my fellow black associate, Franklin, beyond that entryway. Franklin, who got white girl drunk at every firm function, karaoke'd "I Feel Pretty" into a microphone. Franklin had come wearing the perfect icebreaker. He wore a white smock and a black bow tie, the uniform of every black busboy and waiter at every Old Line restaurant in the city. Café de Refugee, Carnation Room, Pierre's. No, not Pierre's. There were no brothers at Pierre's. I wasn't sure what must have been more mortifying for Franklin, that he was singing so poorly or that no one paid him any mind. It couldn't have helped that he was too black to be pretty. My frenemy, good old backslapping Riley, was bent over a table giving the managing shareholder, Jack Armbruster, a foot massage. Sweat made Riley's bald head glow. He looked like a scoop of chocolate ice cream melting under the parlor lights. Riley was dressed as a parish prison inmate, which rankled my sense of propriety. They saw enough of us dressed that way in news reports. However, I had to admit it was an impressive getup. He wore a day-glow orange jumpsuit and even a fake chest tattoo. He carried clinking leg shackles slung over his shoulder as if ready to reincarnate himself on request. Riley was working the old fart's feet. Feet so gnarly they seemed like roots ripped from the field behind the mansion. He dabbed his dome with a handkerchief. Was a promotion and bonus worth the kind of humiliation Franklin and Riley were undergoing? Confetti rained down on the junior shareholders in the adjacent parlor. You betcha. My son Nigel's procedure would be expensive. After feeding the snarling, three-headed beast of mortgage, utilities, and private school tuition, I only managed to pocket a few copper coins each month. But if I were promoted, I would earn a fat bonus, and Nigel would finally get a normal face over his mother's objections. I idled on the sidelines, nursing a rum and coke, which, in turn, nursed my ever-present migraine, thankfully almost down for the night. I'd lost count of how many drinks I'd had over the last few hours, which meant by now my blood was probably 75% alcohol by volume, and that was on top of the dissipating effects of the plum I took that morning. I told myself on each awakening that I didn't need plums anymore. I told myself I could quit anytime I chose. But I knew better. Those petite purple pills, which turned my nervous system into a tangle of pleasurably twinkling Christmas lights, had become a constant companion.